Hi, I'm Dominique Abreu.
And I'm Alan Kennitzer. And you're listening to The Air Up There, a podcast from the FAA.
You know, Alan, I've been thinking, and I think I want to buy a drone.
Really? So what would you use it for?
Well, Alan, you know I spend a lot of time on social media, and I've been seeing some really awesome drone photography out there, and I kind of want to just try it out for myself. So I might try some drone photography.
I think that's a great idea, Dominique. However, if you do decide to buy one, make sure that you comply with the FAA's rules and regulations for drone pilots.
Of course. I wouldn't be a good FAA employee if I didn't. That's why I spoke with Danielle Corbett, one of the FAA's drone experts. Danielle works as an aviation safety inspector in the FAA's Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration Office, where she leads teams on the development and implementation of regulations, policy, and guidance for small UAS. Small UAS is just another way of saying drone. I talked with Danielle about all of the drone piloting rules that I need to be aware of, because you don't know what you don't know. So here's my conversation with Danielle. Danielle, thanks so much for taking some time to sit down with me today. You know, as I shared with you, I have a lot of questions. So why don't we start with you and the work that you do in the UAS Support Center? And for that matter, what is the Support Center?
Great question. Wonderful to be here. And thanks for having me, Dominique. So I'm Danielle Corbett. I run the support and outreach team in the Office of Integration at the FAA, the Office of UAS Integration. So my job kind of oversees a few different things, one of which is the support center. So we'll start there since you asked about it. The support center is basically a call center that you can call the FAA and ask any question that you have about UAS, and we will give you the answer or find it if we don't know it. And it's pretty outstanding that you can call a federal agency as big as the FAA and as complex as the FAA, and we actually pick up the phone. If you call us at the support center, we will pick up the phone. You would talk to a real person that works in our office. If you send us an email, we'll respond to you. It's kind of the best customer service you can get these days.
That does sound really outstanding. You know, I'm always afraid of asking, silly questions, but do you see a certain type of question come in more often than the other? Just anecdotally.
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, it ebbs and flows. And it's interesting because it really helps us get into the mindset of what's going on out there and what policy issues may be coming up or bubbling up. So consistently, we get questions, really basic questions. I got a drone. What do I do with it? How do I register? I'm confused. Right now we have some new rulemaking coming out for remote ID and operations over people. And there's a new training element to it. So we're getting a lot of questions about, you know, the training and how to access it and what does it mean. So it definitely flows and ebbs and flows with what's going on out there.
That makes a lot of sense. And I bet it's a great way to do a pulse check on how our messaging is going for people.
True.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is kind of a weird episode. I'm going to say, let's talk about me.
Let's talk about you.
I am really into photography. And for a while now, I've been interested in buying a drone, just kind of so I can expand to a cool new type of photography. What do I need to do?
That's probably the most common question we get at the support center. And we're just glad that you're asking. So the first thing that you should do is find a drone that works for you. I mean, it's an exciting purchase. You should get to know your drone and figure out what kind of photography you're going to do and what equipment works best for you. The second thing you're going to do is you're going to receive your drone and you should open up and learn how it works. And while your batteries are charging, you can do the third most important thing, which is to register. Almost all drones are required to be registered with the FAA, unless there's a very narrow exception for drones that are flown just for fun, which in this case, it sounds like you're not because you're adding it onto your business, it sounds like. Or maybe I misunderstood the question. If you just like to take pictures and you want to take pictures with a drone, you have to register it. So you would go to the FAA's drone zone, and the easiest thing to do is just Google it and register your UAS. And while you're in there, you'll be introduced to some of the basic rules and safety guidelines for how to operate it. Some of them are really obvious, like don't hit stuff, don't get in the way of airplanes and things like that. Some of them require just a little bit more insight before you get out there and take the flying. And that's the hardest part, is the waiting. I actually bought a model aircraft a couple of years ago before I worked here. And I got so excited when it came. I took it out of the box and I wanted to fly it right away. And I immediately crashed it into a tree. So don't do that.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So learn how it works. And then as you're looking through the requirements for the FAA requirements for operating safely, you'll find things like you're required to have an airspace authorization. And this is not something that's very intuitive, and it can be very complex, but we have tools available to make it easy for you. And so I guess the moral of the story, without getting into all the complexities or all of the requirements, is to spend a little time on our website and on the Drone Zone learning what those requirements are. Then you can get out there and fly.
Awesome. And what's that website again? It's the Drone Zone.
There's two different websites that you'll want to visit. Both are FAA websites. The first one is the FAA Drone Zone. And the second one is FAA.gov/UAS. So there's a section of the large Federal Aviation Administration website dedicated just to UAS stuff.
Awesome. And UAS is unmanned aircraft systems, right?
Yes, I was just thinking that. So there, you'll see terms used somewhat interchangeably, and it can sometimes be a little bit confusing. UAS, unmanned aircraft systems, is the technical term. And when you look at regulations and more formal documents, you'll see that term used. The common vernacular is drones. And at the end of the day, they kind of mean the same thing.
Okay, very good to know. Terminology can be a little confusing sometimes, so I appreciate it.
For sure.
Okay, so different scenario. Let's say I do want to start a photography business with my drone. Does that change anything? I think you were alluding to a little bit of a distinction there.
It does change the analysis somewhat. So the basic safety rules are in place to keep everybody safe. And so from a very fundamental point of view, a lot of the rules are similar. However, when you start a business, you're operating with a little bit more skin in the game, there's a likelihood that you'll be doing more complex things. And so just like for operating a motor vehicle or any other thing, when you take it to that level, there's a different level of scrutiny that you have to meet in order to operate. So in this case, we have a set of rules called Part 107, which is the rules for small unmanned aircraft, which means anything under 55 pounds. And yet the rules are not really that burdensome. So you're required to get a certificate, what we call a certificate, or many people think of as a license, just like you would to drive a car. And in order to get that, you have to take a written exam, and you have to take that at a testing center. And then you have just some more stringent requirements on where and when you can operate. So you'll have to become a little bit more familiar with the airspace and take into consideration, you know, the more complex requirements for doing things like flying higher, farther, faster, or, you know, under a deadline.
Got it. So really at the forefront is safety, which I guess comes at no surprise, right? Basically, everything that the FAA does is with safety in mind. So I really appreciate the analogy of the drone certificate for Part 107 being sort of like a driver's license.
Yeah, and that's a really important point, because sometimes, you know, you think, I'm going to take this drone, I'm going to fly it, you know, real low in my backyard or, you know, over a building, and what's the big deal? And in part, like you said, safety is kind of at the core of everything that we do. And so if we have a uniform set of rules that everyone's following, then it follows that we should be safe and also secure. This isn't necessarily the impetus for the rules, but if you think about public acceptance and watching this industry grow, when you watch a car drive and that car is speeding or swerving, you notice it because it's out of the ordinary. Or if you see it go through a stop sign, you expect the car to stop at a stop sign and go straight, turn left or right. People don't know what to expect. General public don't know what to expect when operating drones. The more people comply with the rules and the more people operate in a predictable manner, the easier it is for people to operate, if that makes sense. You can go out and people will not ask you too many questions or bother you, or it will become more obvious how to operate safely. And that's what we're trying to get. At the end of the day, that's how a safety culture is born, when the rules become ubiquitous and everyone's following them.
That's awesome. Okay, Danielle. So backing up a little bit, let's say I've bought my drone and I've taken it out of the box. You mentioned something about charging batteries. Is this like when you get a new cell phone and they say you need to charge it fully? I mean, how serious is that step?
I don't know. I mean, the drone that I bought, I had to charge my batteries as the first step before I could go fly it. There are so many different kinds of drones out there, and they all have different operating requirements. And that kind of more to the point that you really need to get familiar with your piece of equipment, what the requirements are, what the manufacturer recommends, how you operate it. Some manufacturers will give you a little bit of training, kind of walk through the different components. But generally speaking, most commercial off-the-shelf small drones have batteries and a camera and rotating propellers. So you really want to get familiar with your equipment before you go fly it, so you don't end up in a tree like I did.
I definitely don't want that. Does the FAA recommend any courses, or does the FAA offer or sponsor any courses?
The FAA does have a few courses available on the FAASafety.gov website, which is our FAST team, they call it, FAA Safety Team. And those courses are required. There's a couple of different courses with a couple of different requirements, not to get too into it. But for an example, you can get, I said, if you're a commercial person operating under Part 107, you'd have to take a written test at a testing center. There's also a recurrent training online that you can take for free at this FAA safety website. That training is what we call recurrent. So every 24 months, you have to take that training. But there's really good stuff in that training. So there's no sense in not taking it if you just need a refresher at any time. There's also a lot of training out there by other providers. The FAA doesn't endorse that and certainly doesn't require it. But the more you know, the more you know. And that's one of the best things about aviation is that it's a constant learning. So I would say keep yourself educated, take as much training as you can, talk to your friends and learn from their mistakes, learn from your own mistakes. That's how we all improve.
Yeah, kind of developing a community of practice. I know there are lots of drone groups out there on social media where you can connect with others who are flying a similar piece of equipment.
You said that much more eloquently than I did. Yes, a community of practice. Oh. I'm going to steal that term. That's great.
Cool. Yeah, that's fine by me. For our listeners, we'll definitely link all of the websites that Danielle has mentioned during this interview in the show notes for the episode. So wherever you're listening to this show right now, you can probably just scroll down and you'll find a link to the show notes. All right, Danielle. So I live in Washington, D.C., which I know is a kind of a special case. I know we've got a restricted airspace above us, but what kinds of things should I know about where I'm flying my drone? Am I allowed to just fly it anywhere? I assume the answer is no, but how do I figure out where I am allowed to fly my drone?
This is probably one of the most important areas, one of the most common questions we get in the support center and often misunderstood. So I'm glad you asked it. Yeah, the whole airspace we call the National Airspace System. There are certain parts of it, generally near airports, that require prior authorization before flying, whether you're a manned aircraft, a drone, or anything else. DC is a bit of an outlier. You guys have very strict requirements over there. There's a big circle around DC called the Freeze and then another one called the CFRA. If you live in those areas, you need to pay special attention to that. There's special requirements above and beyond airspace authorization. So we won't go into that, but we'll take where I live here in Atlanta. I live outside of the city. So it seems like it's a safe place to fly, but I don't really know where the nearby airports are. I see Delta flying overhead sometimes. I need to figure out if I can fly here. What do? I read about that in the drone zone. I understand I need authorization sometimes. How do I find out? There's a couple of resources available. One is the Before You Fly app, which is available in the App Store. And this will help you do some flight planning. You could drop a pin wherever you are or wherever you plan on flying, and you'll get some information about any airspace restrictions in that area and if you need an airspace authorization. There's also service suppliers that are third parties, not the FAA. They're called LANCE service suppliers, and LANCE is an acronym. It stands for Low Altitude Authorization and Notification Capability. And these are service suppliers that facilitate airspace authorizations for the FAA. So if you're standing somewhere and you're like, I'm going to fly, do I need an airspace authorization? You can pull up a LANCE application. It will say yes or no. You don't need a airspace authorization here. If it says yes, you can apply for it right then and there. And then seconds later, they'll give you the airspace authorization. And it will tell you if there's any other parameters. There may be an altitude limitation or something. It's really important that you comply with the airspace authorizations and know what they are. They're there for a reason, and the reason is safety. I know it seems, you know, when you're flying in your backyard or anywhere, when you're flying a drone that you could see, it doesn't seem like you're in the same universe as airplanes, but I assure you, you are. The airspace requirements are there for anything operating in the national airspace, and that's how we keep ourselves safe.
So to go back to your car and driver's license metaphor, it sounds like doing some flight planning beforehand is kind of like using your GPS to figure out where the roads are and where the roads are closed.
Absolutely, yes. Where the traffic is. If there's an area of high traffic, you don't want to go that way. If there's an area of high traffic, you may not be able to fly. And to that end, there is something, this is getting a little bit more nuanced, but something called temporary flight restrictions that will pop up. So today, you know, I might be okay to fly here in my backyard, but tomorrow, because I live near a stadium, I may not be able to because there's a big game going on or the president is in town. So it's really important that you check it each time that you fly.
Got it. Great to know. Thanks, Danielle. So we've talked a lot about what I can do as a future drone pilot. Are there any things that I shouldn't do? Like if it's raining, can I fly my drone then?
Well, there may be some limitations to your particular drone. I think the main things are pretty commonsensical. You don't want to harm yourself or anyone else and be a good neighbor. So if it's raining, and even if your drone is capable of flying in the rain, if you're unable to see it because it's raining so hard, you're unable to not hit your neighbor's house per se. So that might not be a good idea. You kind of want to stay out of the way of congestion. So that would apply to, you know, you don't want to fly over a stadium full of people. You don't want to fly over people running in a marathon. And one of the biggest things is that you don't want to fly in the area of emergency response. And this is an area where a lot of people want to take out their drone and assess damage or check out a wildfire. They have good intentions and they're using the drones for good, but they're inadvertently getting in the way of emergency response. And sometimes that response has to be halted. So there are some real life consequences for doing something like that. It's worse than rubbernecking, but we know that rubbernecking can cause collateral accidents because you're not looking and people, it causes traffic and traffic causes accidents. It's not really dissimilar to that. It's, you know, there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of variables in an emergency situation, and it's best to just let the professionals do their job and then go fly your drone when things have calmed down. So I'd say, you know, mostly the skies are open. Just use common sense. Stay out of the way of other aircraft. Don't harm yourself. Don't harm anyone else. Don't hit stuff, basically, and be a good neighbor.
Awesome. That's really great advice. And if listeners want to learn a little bit more about drones flying for good or about wildfires and how aviation is used in wildfire response, we actually have 2 episodes about those very same topics. So you can go back in our archive and listen to those. Danielle, is there anything else that that you'd like to share with our listeners before we go? I think I told you this when we met a few weeks ago, but this was actually a topic requested by our audience on social media. So folks are really excited about this.
That's wonderful. I love talking to people. So if we need to do a follow-up, we'd be happy to get into more details. I just think it's really important for people to know that the rules are not meant to be burdensome, that we at the FAA love aviation. That's why we're here. We are trying to promote this industry and let it grow in a way that is efficient and productive. And it's hard to build a brand new safety culture, or I like the word that you used earlier, which was community of practice, which is basically getting the drone community into the mindset of this being a serious tool and an aircraft, which it technically is, rather than simply a toy. And as we all kind of get on the same page with how we're going to operate collectively as a community, I think we will see this industry really take off and the UAS tool being more accessible to more people for more great things.
That's such a hopeful message. I really appreciate that. Thanks so much, Danielle.
Thank you for having me.
Wow, that was great. Do you really think you're going to go out and become a drone pilot?
Yeah, Alan, I mean, Danielle was really helpful. She definitely made me feel comfortable asking what I felt like were basic questions. For any other drone pilots or soon-to-be drone pilots out there, you can contact the team at the UAS Support Center by calling 844-FLY-MY-UA. One more thing before we close today. The FAA recently implemented 2 new drone rules, remote identification, or remote ID, and operations over people. I hear that drone pilots have eagerly awaited these rules for a while, so I hope this is exciting news for you. These new rules have provisions for how drone pilots flying under the small UAS rule, aka Part 107, can operate at night. Before you fly, be sure to read through what this means for you. We'll link the authorization page in this week's show notes, but you can also search Part 107 airspace authorizations on FAA.gov.
The Air Up There is a podcast from the Federal Aviation Administration. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe and share it with someone else. You can find the FAA on social media too. We're at FAA on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and at FAA News on Twitter and YouTube.
Thanks for listening and fly safe.